Declaration of Independence. By the time Franklin arrived in Philadelphia on May 5th, the American Revolution had begun with fighting at Lexington and Concord. The New England militia had trapped the main British army in Boston. The Pennsylvania Assembly unanimously chose Franklin as their delegate to the Second Continental Congress. In June 1776, he was appointed a member of the Committee of Five that drafted the Declaration of Independence. Although he was temporarily disabled by gout and unable to attend most meetings of the committee, Franklin made several small changes to the draft sent to him by Thomas Jefferson. At the signing, he's quoted as having replied to a comment by Hancock that they must all hang together. "Yes, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly we shall all hang separately." Ambassador to France, 1776 to 1785. In December 1776, Franklin was dispatched to France as commissioner for the United States. He lived in a home in the Parisian suburb of Passy, donated by Jacques Donathien Leray de Chaumont, who supported the United States. Franklin remained in France until 1785, and was such a favorite of French society that it became fashionable for wealthy French families to decorate their parlors with a painting of him. He was highly flirtatious in a French manner, but did not have any actual affairs. He conducted the affairs of his country toward the French nation with great success, which included securing a critical military alliance in 1778, and negotiating the Treaty of Paris, 1783. During his stay in France, Benjamin Franklin, as a Freemason, was Grand Master of the Lodge Le Neuf Jour from 1779 until 1781. His number was 24 in the Lodge. He was also a past Grand Master of Pennsylvania. In 1784, when Franz Mesmer began to publicize his theory of animal magnetism, which was considered offensive by many, Louis XVI appointed a commission to investigate it. These included the chemist Antoine Lavoisier, the physician Joseph Ignace Guillotin, the astronomer Jean Sylvain Bailly, and Benjamin Franklin. Constitutional Convention. When he finally returned home in 1785, Franklin occupied a position only second to that of George Washington as the champion of American independence. Leray honored him with a commissioned portrait, painted by Joseph Duplessis, that now hangs in the National Portrait Gallery of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. After his return, Franklin became an abolitionist, freeing both of his slaves. He eventually became president of the Pennsylvania Abolition Society. In 1787, Franklin served as a delegate to the Philadelphia Convention. He held an honorific position and seldom engaged in debate. He's the only founding father who is a signatory of all four of the major documents of the founding of the United States: the Declaration of Independence, the Treaty of Paris, the Treaty of Alliance with France, and the United States Constitution. In 1787, a group of prominent ministers in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, proposed the foundation of a new college to be named in Franklin's honor. Franklin donated £200 toward the development of Franklin College, which is now called Franklin and Marshall College. Between 1771 and 1788, he finished his autobiography. While it was at first addressed to his son, it was later completed for the benefit of mankind at the request of a friend. In his later years, as Congress was forced to deal with the issue of slavery, Franklin wrote several essays that attempted to convince his readers of the importance of the abolition of slavery and the integration of Africans into American society. These writings included An Address to the Public, 1789, A Plan for Improving the Condition of the Free Blacks, 1789, and Sidi Mahmet Ibrahim on the Slave Trade, 1790. In 1790, Quakers from New York and Pennsylvania presented their petition for abolition. Their argument against slavery was backed by the Pennsylvania Abolitionist Society and its president, Benjamin Franklin. President of Pennsylvania, Special balloting conducted October 18, 1785, unanimously elected Franklin the sixth president of the Supreme Executive Council of Pennsylvania, replacing John Dickinson. The office of president of Pennsylvania was analogous to the modern position of governor. It's not clear why Dickinson needed to be replaced with less than 2 weeks remaining before the regular election. Franklin held that office for slightly over 3 years, longer than any other, and served the constitutional limit of 3 full terms. Shortly after his election, he was re-elected to a full term October 29, 1785, and again in the fall of 1786, and on October 31, 1787. Officially, his term concluded on November 5, 1788, but there's some question regarding the de facto end of his term, suggesting that the aging Franklin may not have been actively involved in the day-to-day operation of the council toward the end of his term in office. Virtue, religion, and personal beliefs. Like the other advocates of republicanism, Franklin emphasized that the new republic could survive only if the people were virtuous in the sense of attention to civic duty and rejection of corruption. All his life he had been exploring the role of civic and personal virtue, as expressed in Poor Richard's aphorisms. Franklin had been baptized and educated in a Presbyterian church based on the doctrines of John Calvin. Deborah Franklin, his wife, retained a lifelong association with Christ Church, Philadelphia. Franklin later in life rarely attended Sunday services, but commented that, "Sunday being my studying day, I never was without some religious principles. I never doubted, for instance, the existence of the deity, that he made the world and governed it by his providence. That the most acceptable service of God was the doing good to man, that our souls are immortal, and that all crime will be punished and virtue rewarded, either here or hereafter." One of Franklin's enduring beliefs was in the respect and tolerance of all religious groups. Referring to his experience in Philadelphia, he wrote in his autobiography, "New places of worship were continually wanted and generally erected by voluntary contribution. My might for such purpose, whatever might be the sect, was never refused." Although Franklin's parents had intended for him to have a career in the church, Franklin became disillusioned with organized religion after discovering deism. "I soon became a thorough deist." He went on to attack Christian principles of free will and morality in a 1725 pamphlet, A Dissertation on Liberty and Necessity, Pleasure and Pain. He consistently attacked religious dogma, arguing that morality was more dependent upon virtue and benevolent actions than on strict obedience to religious orthodoxy. "I think opinion should be judged by their influences and effects. And if a man holds none that tend to make him less virtuous or more vicious, it may be concluded that he holds none that are dangerous, which I hope is the case with me." In 1790, just about a month before he died, Franklin wrote the letter in the following to Ezra Stiles, president of Yale, who had asked him his views on religion. "As to Jesus of Nazareth, my opinion of whom you particularly desire, I think the system of morals in his religion, as he left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see, but I apprehend it's received various corrupt changes, and I have, with most of the present dissenters in England, some doubts as to his divinity. Though it is a question I do not dogmatize upon, having never studied it, and I think it needless to busy myself with it now, when I expect soon an opportunity of knowing the truth with less trouble." Like most Enlightenment intellectuals, Franklin separated virtue, morality, and faith from organized religion, although he felt that if religion in general grew weaker, morality, virtue, and society in general would also decline. Thus he wrote Thomas Paine, "If men are so wicked with religion, what would they be without it?" According to David Morgan, Franklin was a proponent of all religions. He prayed to powerful goodness and referred to God as the infinite. John Adams noted that Franklin was a mirror in which people saw their own religion. Adams wrote, "The Catholics thought him almost a Catholic. The Church of England claimed him as one of them, the Presbyterians thought him half a Presbyterian, and the Friends believed him a wet Quaker. Whatever else Benjamin Franklin was, concludes Morgan, he was a true champion of generic religion. Ben Franklin was noted to be the spirit of the Enlightenment. Walter Isaacson argues that Franklin became uncomfortable with an unenhanced version of deism and came up with his own conception of the Creator. Franklin outlined his concept of deity in 1728 in his Articles of Belief and Acts of Religion. From this, Isaacson compares Franklin's conception of deity to that of strict deists and Orthodox Christians. He concludes that unlike most pure deists, Franklin believed that a faith in God should inform our daily actions, but that, like other deists, his faith was devoid of sectarian dogma. Isaacson also discusses Franklin's conception that God had created beings who do interfere in worldly matters, a point that has led some commentators, most notably A. Owen Aldridge, to read Franklin as embracing some sort of polytheism, with a bevy of lesser gods overseeing various realms and planets. On July 4, 1776, Congress appointed a committee that included Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams to design the Great Seal of the United States. Each member of the committee proposed a unique design. Franklin's proposal featured a design with the motto, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God." This design was to portray a scene from the book of Exodus, complete with Moses, the Israelites, the pillar of fire, and George III depicted as Pharaoh. Franklin may have financially supported one particular Presbyterian group in Philadelphia. According to the epitaph Franklin wrote for himself at the age of 20, it's clear that he believed in a physical resurrection of the body sometime after death. Franklin's actual grave, however, as he specified in his final will, simply reads, Benjamin and Deborah Franklin. Virtue. Franklin sought to cultivate his character by a plan of 13 virtues, which he developed at age 20 in 1726, and continued to practice in some form for the rest of his life. His autobiography lists his 13 virtues as 1. Temperance. Eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation. 2. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation. 3. Order. Let all things have their places. Let each part of your business have its time. 4. Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. 5. Frugality. Make no expense but to do good to others or yourself, i.e., waste nothing. 6. Industry. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. 7. Sincerity. Use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly, and if you speak, speak accordingly. 8. Justice. Wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. 9. Moderation. Avoid extremes. Forbear resenting injuries so much as you think they deserve. 10. Cleanliness. Tolerate no uncleanliness in body, clothes, or habitation. 11. Tranquility. Be not disturbed at trifles or at accidents common or unavoidable. 12. Chastity. Rarely use venery but for health or offspring, never to dullness, weakness, or the injury of your own or another's peace or reputation. 13. Humility. Imitate Jesus and Socrates. Franklin didn't try to work on them all at once. Instead, he would work on one and only one each week, leaving all others to their ordinary chance. While Franklin didn't live completely by his virtues and by his own admission, he fell short of them many times, he believed the attempt made him a better man, contributing greatly to his success and happiness, which is why in his autobiography he devoted more pages to this plan than to any other single point. In his autobiography, Franklin wrote, "I hope, therefore, that some of my descendants may follow the example and reap the benefit." Death and Legacy. Franklin died on April 17, 1790, at age 84. His funeral was attended by approximately 20,000 people. He was interned in Christ Church Burial Ground in Philadelphia. At age 22 in 1728, Franklin wrote what he hoped would be his own epitaph. "The body of B. Franklin Printer, like the cover of an old book, its contents torn out and stripped of its lettering and gilding, lies here, food for worms. But the work shall not be wholly lost, for it will, as he believed, appear once more in a new and more perfect edition, corrected and amended by the author." Franklin's actual grave, however, as he specified in his final will, simply reads Benjamin and Deborah Franklin. In 1773, when Franklin's work had moved from printing to science and politics, he corresponded with a French scientist on the subject of preserving the dead for later revival by more advanced scientific methods, writing, "I should prefer to an ordinary death being immersed with a few friends in a cask of Madeira until that time, than to be recalled to life by the solar warmth of my dear country. But in all probability, we live in a century too little advanced, and too near the infancy of science to see such an art brought in our time to its perfection." His death is described in the book The Life of Benjamin Franklin, quoting from the account by Dr. John Jones. "When the pain and difficulty of breathing entirely left him, and his family were flattering themselves with the hopes of his recovery, when an imposthume, which had formed itself in his lungs, suddenly burst and discharged a quantity of matter, which he continued to throw up while he had the power, but, as that failed, the organs of respiration became gradually oppressed. A calm, lethargic state succeeded, and on the 17th instant, April 1790, about 11 o'clock at night, he quietly expired, closing a long and useful life of 84 years and 3 months. Franklin bequeathed £1,000, about $4,400 at the time, each to the cities of Boston and Philadelphia, in trust to gather interest for 200 years. The trust began in 1785, when a French mathematician named Charles Joseph Mathon de Lacour wrote a parody of Franklin's Poor Richard's Almanac called Fortunate Richard, mocking the unbearable spirit of American optimism represented by Franklin. The Frenchman wrote that Fortunate Richard left a small sum of money in his will to be used only after it had collected interest for 500 years. Franklin, who was 79 years old at the time, wrote to the Frenchman, thanking him for a great idea and telling him he had decided to leave a bequest of £1,000 each to his native Boston and his adopted Philadelphia. As of 1990, more than $2 million had accumulated in Franklin's Philadelphia Trust, which had loaned the money to local residents. From 1940 to 1990, the money was used mostly for mortgage loans. When the trust came due, Philadelphia decided to spend it on scholarships for local high school students. Franklin's Boston Trust Fund accumulated almost $5 million during the same time and was used to establish a trade school that became the Franklin Institute of Boston. Franklin's likeness is ubiquitous. Since 1928, it's adorned American $100 bills, which are sometimes referred to in slang as Benjamins or Franklins. From 1948 to 1964, Franklin's portrait was on the half dollar. He has appeared on the $50 bill and on several varieties of the $100 bill from 1914 and 1918. Franklin appears on the $1,000 Series EE savings bond. The city of Philadelphia contains around 5,000 likenesses of Benjamin Franklin, about half of which are located on the University of Pennsylvania campus. Philadelphia's Benjamin Franklin Parkway, a major thoroughfare, and Benjamin Franklin Bridge, the first major bridge to connect Philadelphia with New Jersey, are named in his honor. In 1976, as part of a bicentennial celebration, Congress dedicated a 20-foot marble statue in Philadelphia's Franklin Institute as the Benjamin Franklin National Memorial. Many of Franklin's personal possessions are also on display at the Institute, one of the few national memorials located on private property. In London, his house at 36 Craven Street was first marked with a blue plaque and has since been opened to the public as the Benjamin Franklin House. In 1998, workmen restoring the building dug up the remains of 6 children and 4 adults hidden below the home. The Times reported on February 11, 1998. Initial estimates are that the bones are about 200 years old and were buried at the time Franklin was living in the house, which was his home from 1757 to 1762, and from 1764 to 1775. Most of the bones show signs of having been dissected, sawn, or cut. One skull has been drilled with several holes. Paul Knapman, the Westminster coroner, said yesterday, "I cannot totally discount the possibility of a crime. There's still a possibility that I may have to hold an inquest." The Friends of Benjamin Franklin House, the organization responsible for the restoration, note that the bones were likely placed there by William Hewson, who lived in the house for 2 years and who had built a small anatomy school at the back of the house. They note that while Franklin likely knew what Hewson was doing, he probably didn't participate in any dissections because he was much more of a physicist than a medical man. Exhibitions. The Princess and the Patriot, Ekaterina Dashkova, Benjamin Franklin and the Age of Enlightenment exhibition opened in Philadelphia in February 2006 and ran through December 2006. Benjamin Franklin and Dashkova met only once in Paris in 1781. Franklin was 75, Dashkova 37. Franklin invited Dashkova to become the first woman to join the American Philosophical Society, and the only woman to be so honored for another 80 years. Later, Dashkova reciprocated by making Franklin the first American member of the Russian Academy of Sciences. This concludes the article. This recording is distributed under the terms of the GNU. Free documentation license available at http://www.gnu.org.